Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. Today, I am joined by Matt. He is a student at Duke, so much smarter than myself, and he is in his undergraduate studies, and he is here today to talk to us, our mitochondrial community, about his family's involvement within this condition and within this community. And he is such an ambitious guy. I've really enjoyed getting to know him, and I'm really looking forward to everyone being able to hear from him as well. So welcome, Matt.
Hi, Marcy. Thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate that.
Well, I've been very impressed with you, and I'm so happy to have you on the show and for you to tell us your family's story. So before we do that, tell us about you and how it ultimately ends up, you know, creating a connection to the mitochondrial community.
Sure. So like you said, Marcy, I'm currently a senior at Duke University. I'm studying biology, chemistry, and global health. And my connection to the mitochondrial community is mainly through my mother and my two maternal aunts. They all have a condition called MID, or mitochondrially inherited diabetes and deafness. So that's kind of how I started to become familiar with the mitochondrial community. And then I found your organization, and it was really great to meet you and the rest of the team.
So when we initially talked, you told me that what your family has experienced has launched you a little bit into what you wanted to study. Can you share with us?
Yes. So starting college, I actually was unaware about my family's disease diagnosis. That kind of occurred at the start of college, but it really sparked me to study a lot of aspects in biology. And I've been mainly interested in mitochondrial biology and then health policy in relation to the symptoms that my mother and aunts experienced. So as part of the disease progression of MID, a lot of patients experience hearing loss, which is pretty much the main symptom that is prevalent in my aunts and my mom. So I've been very interested in kind of exploring how hearing loss impacts people's lives in terms of their educational attainment, their participation in the workforce. I know that was very difficult for my mom, especially during COVID, when people would wear masks, basically making it very difficult for her to lip read. She did not have cochlear implants during the time of COVID. She relied mainly on lip reading as a form of communication. So you can imagine once masks were implemented, a mask mandate was implemented, it was very difficult for her to kind of keep up with the conversations people would have on the day-to-day. And that sparked a change in her mind of what she had to do to essentially be able to effectively communicate with other people that she loves. And that ultimately allowed my aunts as well to think about the process of maybe undergoing cochlear implant surgery. So they all ended up undergoing cochlear implant surgery. I mainly am familiar with one of my aunt's progression and diagnosis, as well as my mom's, just because they're very close. And it occurred at the same hospital system, so the University of Pennsylvania. So that's, mainly my studies, how I became interested in learning more about mitochondrial biology, and then the aspects of my family involvement within the community.
Thank you for sharing all that. So let's just kind of take a step back for those who aren't as familiar with MIDD.
Sure.
So hearing loss is the main, day-to-day symptom that the three of them are experiencing. Are there any other symptoms? Is it progressing further?
Sure. So as the name suggests, there's kind of two main symptoms. It's diabetes and deafness. So the symptom experience between all three of them kind of varies. So for example, one of my aunts had profound hearing loss earlier, but did not really develop diabetes symptoms at all, which is surprising. Whereas my mom kind of had a mix between diabetes and hearing loss occurring at around the age of 22 to 29, although my mom's diabetes is a lot more advanced compared to the rest of my aunts. And then my other aunt is kind of in the middle of those symptoms. So she has hearing loss and pre-diabetes. So it is variable just based off of which parts of the body are affected most by the disease mitochondria. There are other symptoms, including macular dystrophy, which can affect the eyes. There are cardiac effects as well, muscle effects. These systems that are widely reliant on mitochondria to function will be impacted most by this disease.
It's so heavy that there's so many relatives in your family that are being impacted. So before I got involved in MitoAction, I thought that was the norm. Like, my family is so heavily impacted by the disease, and I have so many relatives that have died from it or are, you know, currently struggling with it. But since I came to MitoAction, I have learned that there are quite a few sporadic cases of different types of mitochondrial disease. So it's, our families aren't necessarily the majority, which I was wrong in my thinking before all of this. So I'm curious, I know our listeners are, how does this affect your family with so many, you know, their symptoms are slightly different. I'm sure the way they handle it is different. You know, it can cause different circumstances in a family. Can you speak on that for a second?
Right. Well, in terms of my family, my aunts and my mom did not know that they had a mitochondrial disease until a few years ago. So they've lived life mainly dealing with their symptoms of hearing loss and diabetes. So that has kind of not even been in the realm of their focus that they have a genetic mitochondrial disease. But yeah, so mainly they've been kind of speaking to each other about what the next steps would be in terms of gaining better hearing outcomes, what they could do to control their diabetes, or help like maintain their eyesight in a way that would be beneficial long term. Because I know that my grandmother started to develop some eyesight issues. So these are kind of all the ways that my family has been looking to deal with their symptoms. And just the thought of these symptoms being caused by a mitochondrial disease is very new to them.
Yeah. So do you think it's kind of changed their outlook in life? Do you think they live differently now? Is there fear of progression?
Well, sure. I think now that there's a label to this disease, there can be some sort of comfort found with knowing what might be causing your symptoms. I can imagine that very early on, especially my mom's case, where she wasn't born deaf, she kind of gradually started to lose her hearing up until her 20s. My two aunts, for the most part, had profound hearing loss when they were very young. So it was kind of scary for my mother because she figured that there might be some genetic implication to why she was going deaf, but there was very little information as to why. And so I think now for all of them, there can be at least some comfort in understanding what is causing that. I spoke to my mom, and I think she has a very good outlook on this, which is there's really nothing that she can do to treat this disease from a genetic standpoint right now. All she can do is remain positive, listen to the research that's being conducted, listen to her doctor, and hopefully things will progress in a way that can benefit her in terms of dealing with this disease.
So your mom and your aunts lived most of their lives dealing with the symptoms, as you said.
Right.
So what was the catalyst that made them get genetic testing?
So from what I understand, it was actually more of an accident, and an accident. I mean that in a way.
This is the first time I'm hearing a story like that.
What I mean is, it's kind of a byproduct of another goal. So my mom, during COVID, started to explore the option of getting cochlear implant surgery done. And as part of that process, there are consultations with various specialties that make sure that if you were to get a cochlear implant in your head, that your body won't reject it, that you're healthy enough to do so. And so they screen your heart just to make sure you can withstand that surgery. They screen a lot of other aspects of your body. But one of the aspects, as well as a genetic testing to see if there's anything that could be potentially triggered in, you know, performing the surgery. And that is where my mom encountered a doctor at the University of Pennsylvania who started to connect the dots a little bit. He understood that my aunts were also deaf. And so he started to think that it would be wise to get a full genetic test for my mom. And she was enrolled in studies then. And as part of the study benefits, she was able to get this full genetic testing, which would otherwise have been not very productive for my mom, just because it's a very costly test. But through those results, she found that she did have a mitochondrial disease. And then that's what allowed my aunts to kind of also be under the impression that they were affected by the same disease. They went to get genetic testing as well, I believe. And that's how we all arrived at the status of this disease.
Wow. I do appreciate the word comfort and just the knowledge. And, you know, there's so many people that are in our community that haven't received a genetic diagnosis or, you know, have gone several years of testing and back and forth. And there's a lot of fear and uncertainty, you know, and there can be some comfort in certainty, right? So this is an interesting set of circumstances. Usually it's so the diagnostic journey is so different than what your family has experienced, right?
Right. And I will say that that's one of the areas that I'm most concerned with, is just how long it takes for some patients to gain the correct diagnosis, just because these diseases are so multifactorial that that mitochondrial disease origin might be completely overlooked, especially considering the fact that these symptoms like diabetes and hearing loss are not so uncommon in the general population, that it's very hard to connect the dots. And even more so, gaining a full genetic test is, I mean, very costly, unaffordable for the average American. And that's something that needs to be addressed in the future, I believe, to help patients feel that comfort that comes with gaining a correct diagnosis.
Every time I talk to someone, like I'll use the term like a patient journey story. There's so many layers of this that you're right. Like there's so many things that I wish I could just like wave a magic wand and change. And it seems so layered and so intense. And I hope that me and you can see progress on both of those in our lifetime, you know, but it's so slow and it's moving slower than, you know, possibly us progressing in our conditions, you know? So you have a brother.
I do.
A twin brother.
Yes.
So is there concern about the two of you?
So given the nature that this is a maternally inherited disease, there's always the thought that, you know, there could be some symptoms developing in any of the children of my aunts and my mom. However, I will say that my cousins do not have any of the symptoms that my aunts or mom have. And my brother and I have not exhibited any of the symptoms. And that might be mostly attributable to the fact that mitochondrial diseases affect parts of the body in which there are, you know, congregations or large percentages of affected mitochondria. So disease mitochondria, I can only believe that the expression of disease mitochondria is relatively low in the parts of the body that affect my aunts and my mom for all of us. But there's really no certainty that I have yet. I haven't gotten a genetic test like my mom has. So I wouldn't necessarily say either that I'm worried, just because even if I were to get a diagnosis, there's really nothing that can be done at this stage to, you know, genetically edit the mitochondrial genome to cure this disease. But ultimately, I believe that living life with the thought that I've had no symptoms previously and just to maintain my positive outlook is the best for me to progress forward.
Right. So you, your brother, and your cousins are all older than your mom and your aunts were when they first became symptomatic, correct?
So my cousins were, like, they are all older now than my aunts were in developing hearing loss. So that might signify that they won't, that they won't develop hearing loss potentially, but that also might be triggered later in life. It's all kind of a waiting game, which isn't fantastic if you think about it too hard. That's what I try not to do, but I can only be positive in the fact that my cousins have not developed any of the symptoms that my mom or my aunts have yet. I will say that my mom started losing her hearing significantly around my age right now, currently. So, you know, I live life believing and hoping that that necessarily won't be my same fate. But if it is, I do know what life looks like for my mom. And I know how I would live if I had those symptoms. And, you know, I think it's a positive to at least be able to have that prior experience of understanding how to live with this disease before it may actually manifest. But, you know, we'll see in the future what life has in store for me. That's pretty much where I'm at currently.
I think it might be nice to talk for a minute about just it from an educational standpoint for our community. What was the process of getting the cochlear implants for your mom and your aunts and like getting acclimated to them?
Right. So the process, I know I spoke briefly about this, but during COVID, it was very difficult for my mom to keep, especially the masks. That kind of prompted maybe having a consultation with various doctors. There's a lot of back and forth that went into getting a cochlear implant just because they do have to, you know, cut off a lot of your biological hearing by implanting this technology in your brain and in your head. So my mom was always hopeful that maybe there would be some kind of cure that could be offered in her lifetime to restore her hearing from a completely like physiological aspect. But she eventually figured it would be wise to get cochlear implants. She originally started with just the one cochlear implant. And that process, like I spoke about before, the doctors that will perform that surgery consult other specialties just to make sure that your body won't reject this implant. There won't be any negative side effects. But after this implant is put inside your head, there's a month period in which the patient kind of waits before the cochlear implant is turned on. So once the cochlear implant has to be turned on for you to start hearing, like, or gaining some hearing capabilities. And that can be very jarring. I know that was the case for my mom, just because she said that it's kind of like Darth Vader in her head, which is funny because I'm a big Star Wars fan. But it was very hard for her to acclimate to like these new voices and sounds she was hearing. But she worked very, very hard. And I give a lot of credit to my mom on to be able to understand and make out different voices, different sounds. And so now she has pretty great hearing qualities, which I'm very thankful to the doctors and to my mom herself for pushing her to get the cochlear implants to hear at a level that is very beneficial for not only herself, but for everyone she interacts with. She's doing a great job in that regard. But yes, that was the main process of receiving a cochlear implant, kind of going through that consultation. And ultimately, it's a game that relies lot on luck. Some patients won't be able to undergo cochlear implant surgery if there's anything that might reject the cochlear implant. So there is some variability in that regard. And also, there's a lot of work that has to be done on the day-to-day to start to acclimate your body to hearing in a different way. And that can be a very long process for some patients. I know that was the case with my mom, but you know, it's very dependent on the person.
So is there like a therapist that can kind of help guide them through the process, or?
So I'm not too familiar in that sense of who can be there to kind of consult. I know my mom definitely spoke to the doctors that she was working with, explaining her symptoms and trying to figure out what she could do to better her situation following cochlear implant surgery. And I imagine that's the case. Like, the care providing team will be there to consult patients that have newly experienced hearing, especially if it's the case that I know with my mom, she was very reliant on lip reading. So hearing wasn't necessarily an important aspect of her communication. She did wear hearing aids though, but once she had this cochlear implant, it was a big adjustment to kind of now rely on your ears and hearing as a form of communication. So that was widely discussed with her care team.
I'm glad that, you know, glad is an interesting word to use. I guess maybe that's not the best word to use, but the main symptom is treatable for your mom and aunts. You know, that's unique within the mitochondrial disease spectrum.
Right. I will say that that is one fortunate aspect, if you can kind of think that way, about this.
It's an odd way of talking about it.
Right.
But I think we're both just being honest.
Right. I will completely agree with you. The other symptom, diabetes as well.
Yeah.
Has had a long track record of treatment and management. So there were at least some resources, even before my mom knew that that might be from a mitochondrial origin. There were a lot of available resources for her to kind of look at and see how to manage both of those symptoms, which is very positive. In terms of maybe the other symptoms, like cardiac issues as well, there's a lot of research done on heart disease. So these are all symptoms that can be pretty managed, which, like you said, is very fortunate in my mom and aunt's case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wish that they didn't have to be part of this at all, but I mean, science has come a long way in those specific aspects, you know?
Right, exactly.
But I give them a lot of credit because that's kind of what I was thinking, the idea of it being so jarring to all of a sudden hear all of these voices and noises that you're not accustomed to.
Right. Yeah, that was definitely, I do distinctly remember when my mom had her cochlear implant turned on. It can be also alarming too, especially because you're perceiving new things that you've never even like thought to, I don't know, deal with in a while. Now all of a sudden there's an influx of new information to your brain that it's not used to. You have to make sense of all of that, whether you like it or not. So I remember my brother and I, when we would quarrel a little bit or we would play our games and get loud, my mom was just not used to hearing all that and would just be, it was overwhelming. And I agree, it's overwhelming for any parent to hear all that like boistering noise. But yeah, in my mom's case, it was a lot to process at once. And I can imagine that's the case for a lot of patients, especially those who undergo cochlear implant surgery. So
maybe that'll be motivating for you and your brother not to quarrel.
Well, I will say once we realized it did have that effect on our mom, because we were also new to this process too. We, you know, when I originally was familiar with her hearing loss kind of outlook, I was not as well versed in what cochlear implant surgery would cost in terms of, you know, financial aspects, but then in terms of the whole social aspects, I did not understand the impact it would have on
right.
my mom. But once she kind of demonstrated that, like, this is a lot for me, that prompted me to become interested in maybe the effects of cochlear implant surgery. And same thing with my brother. And we started to realize, okay, we might also have to change a little bit of how we live our lives to accustom our mom, because it is a lot to put on our mom at one time.
Yeah, yeah. And anything to lighten her load.
Exactly. Yeah, she had already gone through so much. And
yeah,
it was all responsibility almost to lighten that load, as you say, because I can just only imagine how stressful even mundane tasks were day to day, just hearing all these new sounds. And so we kind of took it upon ourselves to maybe do things more in a way that she could understand and process more efficiently.
Well, I really wish her and your aunts all the best. And I'm really hoping that this is, for whatever reason, that generation was hit with it and your generation won't be. And that the future is going to be very bright for your family. I personally know how heavy it can be for a whole family to be impacted by a mitochondrial condition. And it's rather tough, especially, you know, if people don't handle it all in the same ways and, you know, things like that. So you're a senior at Duke right now.
Right.
And based on everything that you've alluded to throughout the episode, you are interested in a lot of different aspects of your studies. What do you foresee yourself doing post-graduation?
Yeah, so I think I want to tailor my career specifically, focus on researching how the symptoms of my family's mitochondrial disease impacts people like my mom and aunt's quality of life. I'm currently involved in research at the Duke-Margolis Center of Health Policy, or Institute now of Health Policy, where I research the indirect economic outcomes associated with hearing loss. So educational attainment, productivity in the workforce, how hearing loss might prevent or inhibit some patients from, you know, getting higher or attaining higher education, how that might be preventative in the workforce as well. I know that was the case of my mom, where having a sensory neural impairment was very difficult and can push some people out of the workforce or out of school. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed. But I also hope to go off to medical school eventually and obtain an MD, PhD degree. So that would be a PhD in a field like population health sciences, health policy, epidemiology, focused on what I had previously described. And then the MD would be more of a foundational understanding of how mitochondrial diseases really are multifactorial diseases and affect the body. I think that education would be very, very, not only helpful, but mandatory for me to be able to help people like my mom who are so widely affected by these various symptoms.
Yeah, yeah. I give you so much credit. I mean, your mom has to be so proud that, you know, you've internalized this so much that you want to make the world better for people like her, you know, in the future. So I thank you so much. You know, there, it's rare to come across someone that is so interested in the research, and you're young and you will hopefully have many decades to work in this field and really make an impact for the future of our mitochondrial disease community and for others as well. So thank you, Matt. Thank you for being here and for taking time out of your busy college student life to do this podcast with MitoAction. And I thank you. Thank you for your energy.
Thank you, Marcy. I also want to thank you as well and the people at MitoAction who are working so diligently to raise awareness to mitochondrial diseases. One of the reasons why I became interested and saw your organization is just through the massive scope and impact that you guys have had on families like my family. And I think that just being able to share my voice is one part in helping patients like my mom, my aunts, and for those who do not have the awareness yet of the fact that they have a mitochondrial disease. So just the work that everyone is doing at MitoAction, I want to thank you guys for really putting together all of this and continuing to help people that are so widely affected by mitochondrial diseases. So thank you guys so much for having me as well.
You are more than welcome. I appreciate your kind words.
It's been a pleasure having you on, Matt, and I expect that we will have you on in the future as you continue your research and you can talk to me about things that I'll only understand a fraction of, but I will appreciate all of your diligent work. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.